Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And that is right, we are back with a brand new episode. This is kind of a surprise episode, if you will. There's no new UFC event going on this upcoming weekend of July 4th. It's currently July 2nd as I'm filming this. And over the next few days, there's just no events going on for me to cover. And I was just going to wait until next week to record an episode, but this will be dropping Monday, July, was it 6th, when you could potentially be listening to this at the soonest. And I was just thinking, you know what, there is so much going on in UFC. We're also at the halfway point for the UFC. So I figured, what better to do than just have a full UFC-centric episode. We're going to be going through some new fights, look at the updated rankings, as a lot has gone down in terms of the UFC rankings, some massive things. You could call this the biggest UFC rankings update post-UFC 317 that we've had so far this year. Going to be looking at the current state of each division, what's going to be next for title fights, and big matchups that are going to be coming. And we're also going to analyze my predictions that I have made so far as who I think would be champion, who would have the biggest rise, and who would have the biggest fall, and see how I'm doing. And we're going to end the episode with giving my halfway through the year predictions. These are some rough predictions. I'm not predictions, awards, if you will, fighter of the year, female fighter of the year, fight of the night, whatever. Going to be doing all that to end the episode, but it's kind of a rough draft, if you will. I mean, I was able to go through and kind of recollect everything that's gone down through the first 6 months of the year, but by the end of 2025, we'll have a set in stone list. So getting on into it with what we always kick off every episode with, new UFC fights. And we have a couple set in stone, and then we have some that are on the rumorville or in the works. So let's look at the ones that are currently set in stone. And first off, UFC Vegas 108, lightweight action. And for this fight being in the Apex, Criminal, Esteban Ribovic back in action. Just put in EA Sports UFC 5, by the way. I have no idea how Esteban ended up in the game, but this dude holds wins over Daniel Zaluber and Terrence McKinney. He is a absolute warrior coming off a fight of the night against Jared Gordon, which he unfortunately lost, but the dude's an absolute warrior. And as for Elvis Brenner, I mean, we knew Elvis was good. He is kind of in this 3-2 awkward spot now. Now, mind you, I know one of those losses is to Matheus Rebeke. I think another one is to Mike Tabek Oral Bias. So this dude has lost to some top-level opposition. But, I mean, this guy has some great knockouts as well. Also, knocked out Guram Kuladze, which is not easy to do. Matchup coming at you, UFC Paris. Yunese Dubin making her second run in the UFC after losing her debut. The Venezuelan will be taking on the 6-0 lady from England, Kennedy the Machine 2.0 Freeman. She's posing here with a belt, I presume. It's from Cage Warriors, so she must be a legit Cage Warriors competitor. This is a good fight. The UFC Paris card is coming together very nicely. I'm waiting to see who we get Benoit Saint-Denis taking on. That's what I'm waiting to see. I'm really ready for some Benoit Saint-Denis fight action. But Yunese Dubin, Kennedy Freeman, I don't know what to expect. But Kennedy Freeman looks like a little badass, so I think I'm going to ride with her for that one. Another one on that Paris card, the number 7th ranked heavyweight, Marcin Tybura, fresh off of his win over Renato Dinas. That is right, he's back in action. He's taking on a man who he beat pre-UFC, none other than Ante Delija. Ante Delija making his UFC debut. He is most known for being in the PFL, holds wins over Henan Ferreira, Rico Rodriguez, and even UFC veteran, I guess if you want to call him that, Jorgen De Castro. I mean, Jorgen had almost a win on a UFC pay-per-view once, funny enough. But yeah, this fight's going down. Ante is 25-6. He's about 35 years old. When this goes down, he'll be 35. And yeah, Croatian, the dude is a legit competitor. And these two did fight back in the early days of their careers, and Marcin was able to come out on top, but now they're looking to run it back. And it's been tough to break heavyweights in. We just watched Rizvan Kuniev fail. That didn't work. Now, Talashan Teixeira, we're going to talk about him later on, has a lot of potential to break in, but with Derek Lewis, it's just impossible to tell. Derek Lewis is the most unpredictable fighter. He's either going to get knocked out or he's going to get a knockout. There is no in between here. But Ante Delija, Marcin Tybura, this is a great matchup, and this is going to be a perfect main card fight, I guarantee. Now, the only worry I have is Marcin Tybura is prone to either getting a quick finish or being finished quickly, or the third option, which is a boring three-round decision. So there really isn't an in-between, like a good three-round war. It's either he's out there quickly, he's getting a guy out there quickly, they're doing nothing for three rounds. So We'll see what happens with Ante Dilja coming back to the UFC. In our last official matchup, UFC 318, Bruno Ferreira supposed to take on Ikram Alkhasarov, and son of a gun, Ikram pulling out. As always, I swear, Ikram Alkhasarov always pulling out. And Bruno Ferreira will instead be taking on the 6-0 Jackson McKay. Jackson McVay, I think it is actually, not McKay. But Jackson was supposed to fight Cedric Dumas on short notice. He pulled out, and then he was supposed to fight some Ewert guy. Ewert missed weight by 10 pounds, was cut on the spot. And they're like, Jackson, we're so sorry. How about you take on Bruno Ferreira at UFC 318? Now, is this a harder fight than I think either of the guys he's going to take on? Yeah, but it's worth the risk. And honestly, Bruno Ferreira, he's 4-2 in the UFC. Wins over Gregor Rodriguez, Armin Petrosian, Dustin Stolfus, among some. He's also prone to getting, you know, beaten by some of these guys. No, Sutton Ruzaboyev. And, oh my gosh, who did he just lose to? Abus Magomedov. So it's not impossible for Bruno to lose. So if you're Jackson McVay, you just got to find a bit of, what do you want to call it, moxie mojo, and get over the knockout power of Bruno Ferreira and even the grappling, because he mixed in the grappling too, and you should be golden. But those are all the official UFC fights we have. Now, there are some that are being rumored, including one for UFC 319, Jeff Neal versus Carlos Prates. That's right. It, I believe, is just about fully in the works. I know they've been working on this for some time. It's supposed to be going down maybe as the co-main event or the third fight on that DDP Chimaev card. And UFC Chicago is getting absolutely loaded up, and it's a shame I'm going to miss it, which sucks, guys, to house sit. But yeah, Carlos Prates back in action against Jeff Neal. I love this fight. I think it's a great bounce-back fight for Prates and a good opportunity for Neal to prove, hey, I'm a veteran, I'm legit, I still belong here. So keep your eyes out for that one. But, I mean, I can tell you my early prediction right now, and that is that Carlos Prates is getting another knockout here. Another bout that is apparently in the works is absolutely insane. UFC Noche, Rob Font. Rob Font, the number 8 guy in the world, just beat Gene Matsumoto. Take it on. It's apparently really getting traction here. That's going to happen. Raul Rosas Jr. That is right. The youngest UFC fighter to ever get a win. You can even say get a finish ever. You got a finish as a teenager. Is back. And I know this is UFC Noche card, but is Raul really ready? I think we took a look at Josh Vander. We're like, oh, he's 23. Oh my gosh, why don't we just give Raul Rosas, who's what, 20, 21? Let's give him a top 10 guy. And I can see this is a favorable matchup for Rosas Jr., but he has just not really given us anything to make him think he could hang with a top 10 guy. I mean, much less a top 15 guy, I wouldn't even consider him. But it is still a fantastic matchup, and that UFC Noche card is looking mighty appetizing. And the UFC always gives us fights we don't even know that we want to see. And honestly, I'm all game for it. I'm all game for it. I'll be locked into this one. I'll be tuned in, and maybe I'll pick Raul. Maybe. And never know. You know, sometimes I'm feeling a little spicy with my predictions, so we'll have to see. Another matchup. Paddy Pimblett, Justin Gaethje. It's in the rumor mill. It's apparently going down. I don't know if it's really true. No one's really saying anything. Apparently, DDP accidentally leaked it, and everyone's just been kind of being a bit hush-hush over the whole thing. Now, if that is the case, I think it's perfect, and it sets up Armin versus Dan Hooker, which we'll get into, and we kind of go through all the divisions. But really, I'm telling you, Paddy versus Justin Gaethje is the fight to make. If they do decide to do it, I'm in full support of it, and I think that is the correct aspect. And whoever wins that, I'll take Ania Topuria, which I absolutely love, and I really hope it's Paddy, because I think Justin Gaethje just gets flatlined. I mean, honestly, Gaethje complaining that he deserves a title shot is just, he's delusional. Some guys must genuinely not understand the rankings. Like, there's some guys that actually understand the rankings, that make strategic call-outs, like Peyton Talbot calling out Adrian Yanez. That's a good call-out. Or when Leron Murphy wins and he says, I want anyone above me. Or when Gene Silva wins, he says, I want anyone above me. Those are realistic call-outs. Not Justin Gaethje being half of us even going, I need a title shot. No. That is not how it works. But all this talk, all these new fights got me thinking about the UFC rankings. So let's take a look at the updated UFC rankings, because a lot has transpired since they updated yesterday, July 1st. So first off, women's bantamweight, no changes. No changes in women's bantamweight, women's pound for pound, women's strawweight, no changes there. Where the changes do happen is in women's flyweight. Macy Barber drops down one spot to 6, no longer tied with Jasmine Jasu Divicius at 5. Rose Namajunas remains at 7. Tracy Cortez, following her win, moves up 2 spots to 8. Vivian drops 2 spots to 10. The correct move here. the utterly correct move. Great stuff by Tracy Cortez, shutting out Vivian Arujo. It's the best for business decision. It's what we needed, and it really lets me know that Tracy Cortez is still a legit competitor and didn't get the brains knocked out of her after she lost her eyelash taking on Rose Namajunas. But Tracy now has the opportunity to fight up, and we're going to go through all the divisions coming up here, so I'll talk about who she could take on next, but finally back in the top 10, love to see. And as for Vivian Arujo, you're unfortunately just going to see a steady decline here. She's going to be fighting downwards, and looking at the rankings, let me just tell you, Wang Kong, yeah, that's going to be someone she's taking on next. But good stuff for Tracy Cortez now in the top 10. Heavyweight to light heavyweight, no changes. As for middleweight, you got Abus Magomedov dropping down one spot to 15, no longer tied at 14. Makes complete sense. I have no idea why they're like, oh, let's just tie Abus with Roman Kapilov at 14, and then, oh, let's just drop him back down. So I don't think they know what they're doing. Abus doesn't have a fight, really does need a fight. I don't know, we'll have to see, but there's a little minute change. Welterweight, no changes there. Here's where things start to pick up. The lightweight division, Ilia Topuria, is now your champion. Everyone gets the boot down. And for Islam Makhachev, they didn't want to take him out of the rankings. So technically, Islam is just the number one guy. Oddly enough, so he's the number one guy. Armand 2, Oliveira 3, Gaethje 4, Holloway 5, Poirier 6, Hooker 7, Gamrot 8. Beneil remains at 9. Following his win, good stuff. Paddy drops 2 spots to 10, Rafael Fiziev to 11, and Adam Moicano to 12 following his loss. Don't really know what's going to happen with him, to be honest. Chandler to 13, Benoit Saint-Denis remains at 14, Grant Dawson to 15, and Joel Alvarez gets the boot from the rankings. So good stuff overall. We're going to just have to wait and see what's next for Ilia Topuria, but yeah, we wait for Islam Makhachev fight news. I'm assuming that's going down in October, one could hope, but the year is going to quickly fill up. Let me tell you, the year is going to quickly fill up, and we're going to say, oh my gosh, why didn't this guy fight this year? And it's because fight cards are filling up. Moving down to featherweight, some changes here, as with the loss of Ilia Topuria, they finally remove him from the rankings, and Moser Ravlov moves up 2 spots. He's now ranked number 2 in the world. Amazing. Love to see that. Diego Lopez at 3, Yair up to 4, Arnold Allen and Brian Ortega tied at 5, Leroy Murphy 7, Aljo 8, Aljo and Brian Ortega having a fight coming up, Gene Silva to 10, Yusuf Zalal to 11, Danny Game jumps 2 spots to 12, David Onama remains at 13, Kevin Kerr bumps up to 14, and Giga Chikadze is back in the rankings at number 15. Yeah, there's going to be a lot to sort out at featherweight, let me tell you that, but seeing Mosfar up to 2 just makes me very, very happy. Bantamweight, no changes. But the most insane change, I have never seen a number jump this high since maybe Sugar Sean O'Malley. Joshua Van moves up 11 spots to the number one contender on the flyweight rankings. Utterly insane. Utterly insane. Congratulations, Joshua Van. I mean, earned, deserved. He's getting the next title shot. Oh, man. Royval drops 2 spots to 3. Doesn't make any sense. They moved him below Moreno, being that just about a year and 4 months ago, he beat Brandon Moreno. Don't know the logic there. Amir Albazi to 4, Kekar France to 5. Awkward spot for Kai losing, but still the number 5 guy in the world. Tatsuro Tera to 6, Cape to 7, Perez to 8, Asuma Baev to 9, Ursig 10, Tim Elliott 11, Tagir to 12. Ramazan Tamariyov remains at 13. Bruno Silva actually moves up from 15 to 14. Kai Sakura is now ranked at number 15. So random how they do these. And then the big one, everyone's been talking about it. It's the men's pound for pound. And yes, Ilia Topuria is now the number one pound for pound fighter on the planet, as he should be. I saw people mad that Islam Makhachev is no longer the pound for pound top guy. Let me just tell you. I mean, here's the thing, Islam Makhachev, it's going to be him and Ilia jumping each other. When Islam inevitably beats Jack Del Maddalena, he's going to jump Ilia Topuria. When Ilia Topuria knocks out Armin, Paddy, or Justin Gaethje, he's going to jump Islam. When Islam defends the welterweight championship, he's going to jump him. This is going to be an inevitable thing until these two ultimately fight, which we have been waiting for. And, you know, we've seen these collisions before with the pound for pound. I recall, I think it was Volk and Islam were the number one and number two guys, and they dueled on the pound for pound. So just the same things happened with Ilia and Islam, but deserved, so deserved. So Islam's down to 2, Marab's to 3, Driscus Duplessis remains at 4, coming up at 5, jumping 4 spots, Alexander Pantoja getting the respect he deserves. I'm going to be honest, he should be number 3. Okay, I think he should be past Marab and definitely DDP, but number 5, we'll take it. Pantoja has had 4 title defenses four title defenses. No one else can say they've been having out here four title defenses. So amazing stuff for Pantoa. So deserved. And he is going to be a reigning defending champion for a while. Volk remains at 6. Magomed down to 7. Makes complete sense. Jack down Molina at 8. Aspinall at 9. Perry at 10. Holloway at 11. Bilal at 12. Armin moves up one spot to 13. Hamzat moves up one spot to 14. And Charles Oliveira drops two spots to number 15. Yeah. Well, Charles is still in the pound for pound, so good for him. But yeah, the UFC rankings have just completely shifted around. The big one, Ito Pura, your new men's pound for pound fighter, your new lightweight champion. Amazing. The 11 spot jump from Joshua Van is surreal. Most Revlov up to 2. I love seeing that. I really do. I guess you could say Giga joining the rankings, but that's not too much. And Tracy Cortez, now a top 10 fighter. So lots of fun stuff in the rankings. Lots of interesting moving pieces, if you will. But the one thing that I do want to talk about is the current state of every division, because we've looked at the rankings, we've gone over that, but what even is the current state of every division? What champion is going to challenge who? So we're going to go through all 11 divisions real quick, and we are going to look at who's going to be taking on who, and I'm going to give my thoughts on what matchups I think should take place. So starting off, we'll go top to bottom. Women's strawweight, Zhang Wei Li is your champion, and she has two options. She has two options. Honestly, we can just group flyweight and strawweight right now because Zhang Weili and Valentina Shevchenko are either going to fight one another at flyweight. Zhang Weili will probably keep her belt and try to become a double champion, which I think should be the co-main event under what the ultimate Amanda Nunes-Kayla Harrison matchup we're going to talk about will be. But if that's not the case, Zhang Weili is the number one ranked Virna Jandidova, and Valentina Shevchenko is the number one ranked Natalia Silva. So you're either going to get two Brazilians fighting for the belts, or you're going to be getting a double championship opportunity. And what do I think they should do? They should most definitely do Zhang Weili versus Valentina. I think that makes the most sense. I think it's what everyone wants. And Virna and Natalia Silva can quite literally just wait in the wings to fight the winners and losers of that, because ultimately Valentina loses, they might run that back, or Valentina could just retire. Now, we're going to have to see what happens, but it all comes down to what the UFC wants to do, and honestly, at times, you never know what the UFC really wants to do, but if it's up to me, Zhang Weili should fight Valentina Shevchenko. Now, as for the rest of both divisions, for strawweight, Tatiana Suarez, Jean Chayonin, Amanda Lemos, Jessica Andrade, Mackenzie Dern, those are your top six. Those are 2 through 6 right there, and how do I matchmake these women? I don't really know. Jan Chayonin just beat, I think it was Amanda Lemos, I want to say, or maybe Vera Jandidova just beat Jan Chayonin, but I think Mackenzie Dern should take on Tatiana Suarez. I think they match up very well stylistically, and Mackenzie Dern is on a little streak. She should fight up. Won the first fight main event of the year, for goodness sakes. You could then have Jan Chayonin take on Amanda Lemos. I'm thinking Jessica Andrade, depending on what weight class she wants to fight in, which I think she should fight at strawweight, should take on someone like Jillian Robertson. I think they would match up really well with one another. Yasmin Lucindo and Amanda Hebos at 7 and 8 can go to battle with one another. Lupi Godinez, Tabitha Ritchie, they could match up. Lupi Godinez might actually be taking on Jessica Andrade coming up, now that I think about it, which I would absolutely love. Give her another crack at the top of the rankings. Angela Hill, she always has fights going up. But yeah, women's strawweight division, kind of in a guessing game of what we're going to do. Same thing for women's flyweight. With the loss of Erin Blanchfield and Macy Barber's fight night main event, it was pretty rough for the division. Manon Fiorot's sitting there at 2, coming off a championship loss. I'm thinking she should maybe fight. I don't know. If we're going to have to eliminate Macy Barber, you got Jasmine Jastudovicius at 5, Erin Blanchfield at 4, Lexi Grasso at 3, Manon Fiorot at 2. You have to matchmake them, and Erin and Manon have already fought, so we just matchmake the other two. So I'm going to say Jasmine Jastudovicius should take on Manon Fiorot, and Alexa Grasso should take on Erin Blanchfield. At number 6, Macy Barber, I don't know if she's going to fight again. I'm going to be honest, I think she's just going to hold spots in the rankings till she just progressively drops. But with her health right now, I don't know what we're going to do. Rose Namajunas at 7. She is coming off a win over Miranda Maverick at 11, but I'm not completely sold. And honestly, Tracy Cortez at 8, you could run a rematch with those two. I know that may sound silly, but that could be ultimately a decision they choose to make. Jessica Andrade at 9, she's just going to sit there. Vivian Arujo at 10, I think she should take on Wang Kong. I mentioned it earlier, her versus Wang Kong just makes so much sense to me. I think that's the play that you do right there. And Amanda Maverick at 11, she can fight down The rest of the women's flyweight division at the bottom, nothing much to analyze. We'll wrap up the women's divisions here with Kayla Harrison. Of course, she's taking on Amanda Nunes. Going to be a massive fight. Going to be a main event of a pay-per-view. Can't believe that. Kayla Harrison, four fights in, is now going to be main eventing a pay-per-view. Good for her. What do you do with the rest of them? What do you really do? Well, for the good part about Amanda Nunes coming back is that we actually don't have a number one contender. We really don't. We have to matchmake and play around a bit. So, Julia Pena at one, Hakua Benton at two. Those are going to be women who are going to be fighting down to try and boost up someone. Norma Dumont at four, Aileen Perez at seven, Kat Vera at three. Those are the matchups we're going to be getting. So, I'm thinking Norma Dumont takes on Hakua Benton and Julia Pena takes on Kat Vera. I'm going to matchmake those two. Aileen Perez is slowly working her way up. Macy Chison just lost. Let's do Aileen Perez versus Macy Chison. And Irene Aldana, she's trying to rebuild herself back up. How about her versus Yana Santos? I can really get behind that one. Maribel Silva, I believe, is a matchup coming up with Jocelyn Edwards, I want to say. So we could run Nora Cornole maybe against Irene Aldana, Jacqueline Cavalcante. It's going to be tough to say. As for the bottom, I'm going to say Daria Zelina Vikova and Claudia Segula, who's unranked. Those two should do battle with one another. Bottom of the women's bantamweight division, even the women's bantamweight division as a whole, is not very strong. So I don't know. We're just going to have to see what happens. But for now, you got big fights at women's in the women's divisions. You need to do Amanda Nunes versus Kayla Harrison, and you need to do Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko. Those might be the only fights fans care about, which is kind of sad to say. Jumping from women to the men, men's flyweight, we're in such a refreshing spot. The 23-year-old Joshua Van, the 35-year-old reigning, possibly in the top three greatest flyweights of all time, I think he is, Alexander Pantoja, will be doing battle later in the year, which I am so excited about. And I think Joshua Van has a great shot here. You know, he's young, he's hungry, he is nowhere near the type of guys Pantoja has been fighting. You know, and I'm not trying to say that stylistically he's in similar to Kaikar France, to Brandon Royval, to Brandon Reynolds, because he is pretty similar, but he just has this moxie to him, and just this, he's just looked so good, and the only time he's looked bad is when he was caught with an uppercut in round three by Charles Johnson, and the fight was stopped, some people say prematurely. You could even argue that it was an early stoppage, but Pantoja Joshua Van is going to be fantastic. So, what do I do with the rest of everyone? Well, Brandon Moreno at two, Brandon Royval at three. They're unfortunately going to have to fight down. They really are, and I don't want to see them fight again. Please don't do that. But you have a matchup coming up with Amir Albazi and Tatsuo Taira. I think if Tatsuo wins that, he should take on Brandon Moreno. If Amir Albazi wins that, he should take on Brandon Royval. Now, depending on whoever takes on who, and we have to kind of matchmake out of that, I say Kaikar France goes again with Brandon Royval. All right, so in an ideal world, Tatsuro Taira beats Amir Albazi, and he gets to take on Brandon Moreno, and we run Royval versus Kaikar France. Because they had a fight of the night, I think it was 3 years ago. Actually, it might have been 5 years ago even. I don't even know, but it was only two rounds. It was about a round and a half, you could even say. It was amazing. It was one of the greatest two-round fight of the nights you'll see. Moving down, Manel Cape at seven. I don't know. You could have Manel Cape booked against Brandon Moreno, against Brandon Royval. I think he's going to pull out. I really do. Manel Cape is just, Manel Cape could have been Joshua Van right now, but he got injured or something, which is absolutely crazy. The timeline we live on, thanks to Manel Cape having the most pullouts and cancellations of any fighter we've seen, Joshua Van is getting the next title shot. It's kind of good. It's kind of a good thing. Alex Perez at 8 is taking on, I believe, Steve Ersig at 10, I want to say. We're doing that. Asumel Bayev at 9 is taking on Ramazan Temeriyov. You got Tim Elliott at 11 taking on the 15th-ranked Kai Sakura. Number 14th-ranked Bruno Silva is going to be fighting down. And then you have Tigger Lembekov at 12, who's just going to pick up the scraps, if you will, of flyweights. In fact, I think Manel Cape should take on Tigger Lembekov and have to deal with a grappler and maybe lose. But flyweight's in an excellent position. I think everyone's just happy for Joshua Van. And happy that Alexander Pantoja is an exciting reigning defending champion. And yeah, flyweight is in a good spot. Moving over to bantamweight. Bantamweight's in an interesting spot. It's not bad. I don't really think it's in a bad spot. I just think Mrab has just gone out and he's beaten the number one guy. He's beaten the number two guy. He's beaten the number three guy. He definitely beat the number four guy. He would probably beat the five guy. He's beaten just about everyone in the division. And now it's like, well, what do we do with him? We have to find a number one set contender. And Right now, I would say that's Corey Sandhagen. I would say Corey Sandhagen would probably be a good option just to give him a title shot. I mean, Sandhagen beat Figueroa, Song Yadong, Marlon Vera. They're at the 5, 6, 7. Also win over the number 8, Rob Font, you know, so he's picked up some wins over the last few times, and yeah, he's lost to Pierre Jan and Umar Nurmagomedov, but so what? He's a new face, and I think he'd prove as an interesting stylistic challenge to Murat, as opposed to everyone else. Sean O'Malley at 1 is going to be sitting around for a while. I don't even know what to do with Sean. I really don't. Like, I'm going to be honest, but the thing is we all have to look at Max Holloway. Max Holloway is a perfect example of, here's a guy, goes 0-3 against Volkanovski, and summer of 22, we were legit like, he might be it. He might be done. What does Max do? Fights a contender. Here's this opportunity for him to, when was that? 2024, the BMF belt. Came into the picture, and it was kind of like, here's this BMF belt, you know, just to kind of do something fun. Here's an opportunity to take on Justin Gaethje, builds himself into a global superstar, earns another title shot against Ito Piera. Now, it didn't go his way, but here's what Sean O'Malley can do. He can give someone an opportunity, just like Max Holloway gave Arnold Allen, gave the Korean Zombie. That's what you can do. Sean O'Malley can take on Song Yadong at number 5. He can take on, dare I say, Raul Rosas Jr. if he beats Rafa. He can take on Amin Zahabi. You could even just do Sean O'Malley versus Henry Cejudo just for the heck of it. I think for Sean, it's just going to be a lot of sitting, a lot of waiting, but I do not think he should move up. I have zero supported him moving up to featherweight. I don't think it would work out. Umar Nurmagomedov at 2. He's probably just going to be sitting around for a bit. Maybe take some of the number 5 ranked Song Yadong. I really like that, but might just be waiting. But the Song Yadong fight should be right there. Pyotr Jan at 3 is, of course, given the 13th ranked Marcus McGee a shot. Love that. Devinson Figueroa at 6. Kind of is probably going to be fighting down. I think he could take on Mario Bautista even. Marlon Vera at 7. Him and Amin Zahabi would match up really well. And then as we get into the bottom of the division, Vinicius Oliveira, Montel Jackson, Kyler Phillips, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with all of them. But bantamweight needs just some fights to happen. It just needs some fights to happen, because right now, Merab is outpacing the rest of the division, and when you have a champion outpacing all the contenders, you don't know who to fight. But if it was up to me, Merab, Sandhagen, book it for later in the year. Moving up to featherweight, Volkanovski is your champion, and one would think that him versus Mosfar was just an easy fight to make. Like, that is just the fight that everyone wants, everyone makes sense. Even Volk said, Mosfar is a great challenge, and I would love to fight him. And the UFC is like, no, let's have Mosfar fight the newcomer, Aaron Pico, and you can take on Yair Rodriguez. And I even think that Volk was like, you know, I'll fight Yair Rodriguez, but that just doesn't really make sense. So, going under the assumption that they want Volk to fight, which changing UFC Noche from Mexico to San Antonio from a pay-per-view to a fight night is kind of a tell that I don't think they're going to have Yair fight Volk, but we're just going to work on the assumption they do go through with that, because Mosfar at number 2 is taking on the debuting Aaron Pico coming over from Bellator. The number 3 Diego Lopez taking on the number 10 Gene Silva is a massive, massive fight. Number 5 ranked Arnold Allen, he doesn't have a fight. Number 5 and 8 Ortega and Sterling, they're fighting. What do we do? Leron Murphy, Arnold Allen, I don't know if they're buddies. I really don't. But Leron versus Yair is the fight you should make. It really is the fight you should make. That's what I think they should do. And what do you do with Arnold Allen? Well, Yusuf Zalal at 11. I really like that option. What do you do with Josh Emmett at number 9? Well, Dan Diaz take on Patricio Pitbull, the winner of that. I do hear they might be doing Josh Emmett at 9 and the number 13th ranked David Onama. I think that would be a fantastic fight. Might actually be a bounce-back opportunity for Josh Emmett, but a lot of things up in the air. Commentator at 14 is welcoming Steve Garcia Jr. to the division. I'm picking Steve, and I love Steve Garcia, but if Calvin loses again, it's actually going to break my heart. So I don't even want to see that fight happen. And Giga Chikadze at 15, he can fight some up-and-comer. He can fight frickin'... who was a up-and-coming featherweight? I guess Sean Woodson isn't really an up-and-comer, but there's a couple guys out there. But, you know, it should be Mosfar Avlov, but if Mosfar Avlov beats Aaron Pico like I think he will, we will inevitably get a Mosfar Avlov title shot, and there's no one that Volk is losing to unless he hit Topiara. comes back down to featherweight. Speak of the man, Ito Piro, we move up to lightweight. Yes, he is the champion. Yes, no one knows who he's going to be fighting next, but it's amazing. It's amazing, man. The facet he did it in, the confidence. It's not even cockiness. It is just confidence. He has spoken everything into existence. He speaks like it's already happened. It's utterly insane. There's like a meme going around. I don't know if his wife actually said this, but she said that he held a... They didn't do a birth reveal. He held a party for his unborn son the day before their gender reveal happened, and it turned out to be a boy, which I think is just ridiculous. But Ian Tapira, he is your champion, and here's the issue. Paddy Pimblett is ranked number 10. I don't know if they're going to give the number 10 guy, Paddy Pimblett, a title shot. Now, what will they do? Paddy Pimblett, Justin Gaethje, 4 versus the 10. Winner can be moved up to the number 3, number 2 spot. They can take on Ito Piro. So I'm going to work under the assumption Justin Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett fight. The winner can take on Ito Piro. And it makes sense. It really does. It would be Gaethje's last chance at a title shot that has evaded him for so long. He has an excellent puncher's chance against Ito Piro. As for Paddy Pimblett, he is the most over star. Him and Tom Aspinall battle for being the biggest star in England. They really do. And Paddy Pimblett, he has just proven himself against Michael Chandler was such a stepping stone in his career. And he's reached a level of stardom that many wish they could dream of. I mean, it is crazy to say. I'm going to say this, but out of the majority of our UFC champions, Paddy Pimblett is up there in superiority to popularity. He is more popular than Jack Del Maddalena. I hate to say it, more popular than Pantoja. Him and Merab, he is probably more popular than Merab. I mean, it is ridiculous the level of stardom that Paddy Pimblett has achieved. And I think if he beats Justin Gaethje, it is going to go to insane levels. But elsewhere, Islam's ranked number 1. He'll be moving up to take on Jack Del Maddalena. So we'll just cover that right off the bat. Welterweight division, the championship, it's going to be the number 1 lightweight, Islam versus Jack Del Maddalena. That's going down later in the year. Maybe in Australia, maybe Abu Dhabi. We'll have to see. Armin at 2. Armin, who's probably been the biggest loser of 2025, in my opinion, missing weight. And he is just nowhere near a title shot right now. If we're doing Gaethje versus Paddy, and we have Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway going to battle, and, you know, win or lose, Max Holloway is going to be in a weird spot. You know, it doesn't really matter. But who should Armin fight? The 7th-ranked Dan Hooker. It's really the only option. I mean, I don't think we're going to run back Matheus Gamrot versus Armin Tsarukyan. I really don't. So, Dan Hooker, Armin Tsarukyan, let's make that fight happen. As for Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier, the 5 and the 6, it is tricky for me to see what happens because, I mean, I still don't know who I'm going to pick. I have 3 weeks. I think I actually only have 2 weeks now to decide who I'm going to pick. And I'll be honest, I just can't decide. I really can't decide, guys, because I used to not like Dustin Poirier. I want y'all to know that, you know, when Dan Hooker and Dustin Poirier fought, which, by the way, is the greatest lightweight fight I've ever seen live in the Apex, that was just, it made me fall in love with Dan Hooker, and I picked against Dustin Poirier, not even out of hating him, because I had picked him against Khabib, and he didn't come up, but Poirier will then go on to have his McGregor saga, and I was a McGregor guy, you know, I was a diehard McGregor guy, and I just grew to resent Dustin Poirier, and then I was a Charles Oliveira fan, and Dustin Poirier got a title shot, and I grew to resent him, and then, you know, I actually picked him to lose against Michael Chandler, and oh, I was so pissed when he beat him, and then I watched Gaethje knock him out, and I was happy, and then this weird switch happened. I don't even know how it came to be, but when he knocked out Benoit Saint-Denis, which, by the way, I picked Benoit Saint-Denis, I wasn't even mad, and then he took on Islam Makhachev. And there was just something about that fight where Dustin was Rocky and Drago, Volkov, whatever, was Islam is Russian United States. It wasn't actually, but I just found this love for Dustin Poirier. I realized he's such a great guy, and now I really don't want to see him lose to Max Holloway. But I don't know. That's another topic when UFC 318 goes down. But I'm really excited for that one. A proper retirement fight. Love to see it. The 8th, Matheus Gamrot sticking with the lightweight rankings. Him and the number 9 ranked Beneil and the number 11th ranked Fazeev, they're all going to be intertwined. Going to be honest, here's the thing. Beneil Dariush can't really fight up. You know, I honestly think Fazeev versus Beneil is the move and route to go. And Matheus Gamrot might just have to wait. He said he'd fight down. So maybe Matheus versus Benoit Saint-Denis I like. Matheus versus Grant Dawson, Matheus versus Joel Alvarez. There's some options there, but a lot of uncertainty. A lot of uncertainty. And for Hinata Moicano, he's definitely fighting down. It's just a matter of, is he going to fight Grant Dawson, Joel Alvarez? What's he going to do? And as for Michael Chandler, another guy, I have no idea what to do with Michael Chandler. I really don't. Maybe we'll get Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor in 2026, and we can be like, wow, we actually finally got it. But I don't know. Jumping up to welterweight, we already mentioned Jack Dama, Elena Islam. That's the title picture. But what do we do with the rest of the frickin' division? Well, let's go over what we know. The number 6 ranked Ian Garry is taking on the number 2 ranked Sean Brady. The number 11th ranked Jeff Neal is taking on the number 13th ranked Carlos Prates. Number 12, Stephen Thompson, is taking on the unranked Gabriel Bonfim. Number 14th ranked Kevin Holland, unranked Daniel Rodriguez. Number 15th ranked Michael Page is taking on the number 7th ranked Jared Cannonier in the middleweight division. No idea what's going on there, so that's all squared. What do we do with everyone else? Well, you have Bilal at 1, Shavkat at 3. Shavkat could just get a title shot, but I think he should stay active. I really think he should stay active, and we were supposed to get him versus Bilal twice now. Never came to be. I think that's a perfect fight to do right there. Or you could have Usman fight up, because Usman is kind of warranted an opportunity to fight up. So you do Usman versus Bilal, Usman versus Shavkat. But if I'm Kamaru Usman, I'm just sitting out. I think you could even give Usman the next title shot. I'm going to be honest. You know, people are going to hate this, but Usman taking on Jack Dalma, Elena, and Islam Makhachev, the winner of that, I think it just builds for the winner's legacy. Because I would pick JDM and Islam to beat Kamaru Usman, but hey, that's just my opinion. Number 4 ranked Leon Edwards, I believe, should have a date with the number 7th ranked Michael Morales. As for Joaquin Buckley at 7, he's going to be taking on the loser of some matchup. Loser of Sean Brady and Ian Garry. Loser of Leon Edwards, Michael Morales. Loser of Bilal Muhammad Shavkat Rakhmonov. That's going to be where he's going to be put. Because there's just no point in having him fight down. There really isn't. Joaquin Buckley should just sit still. And as for Colby Covington, 9, Gilbert Burns, 10, I say we just do that fight. It's been a dream fight for MMA fans. Really, in both their careers right now, I don't think any of them want to fight an up-and-coming contender. It just hasn't worked out for them. So I say those two. They have the dream match we've been waiting for them to have, and we just feel joy watching them two fight, because honestly, it would be like, you know, putting the old two guys out to pasture. And also, Kobe's just never gonna fight. I think after a Joaquin Buckley fight, get knocked out in front of Trump, Trump left from his fight. I think he was like, yeah, probably it for me. But yeah, Islam versus JDM, the title shot at welterweight. To middleweight, of course, Driscus Duplessis, the number 3 ranked Tamzat Chimaev, mwah, beautiful. The number 1 ranked Nazardine, number 1 Kyle Barallo, in Paris main event, beautiful. Number 5 ranked Robert Whittaker, the number 12 ranked now, ooh, Rare Day Ritter, beautiful. Main event in Abu Dhabi, a lot of good at middleweight. Number 9 Anthony Hernandez, number 8 Roman Dolidze, another fantastic matchup. We even got the number 10 11th guys, Marvin Vettori, Brandon Allen, they have fights booked. Paulo Costa at 13, Roman Kapilov at 14, they have fights booked. We have been booking middleweight beautifully. Jerry Kinnear at 7, of course, take on MVP, don't know why. We just have two guys we don't know what to do with. Sean Strickland and Israel Adesanya, we don't really know. Now, for Izzy, he could just retire. Israel Adesanya could just retire, but he just still has the itch for fighting. I could just tell. He just has the itch for fighting. He is not ready to let it go. And here's the thing. Izzy versus Sean Strickland makes sense when we look at the fact it's been 2 years since they last fought, where they're at now, but no one wants to see it. I kid you not, no one wants to see it. And what are both these guys going to do? They're just going to sit around. They really are going to sit around, and they're going to end up taking on the winner of Whittaker and Rear Day Ritter, the loser of Kyle Barallo and Nazan Imavov. They're going to end up taking on the winner of Roman Dolidze and Anthony Hernandez. They're going to take on maybe Paulo Costa if he wins. I don't know, but they're just going to do a lot of sitting. But middleweight is beautifully booked, and Hamza versus DDP is another one of those fights. You know, I love Hamza and DDP just the same as I love Oliveira and Ito Pura, but in similar standings, actually in kind of unsimilar standings, because Oliveira had been around so long, DDP, I watched him rise. I watched him come out and knock out guys, go the distance of Brad Tavares, be the first man to knock out Robert Whittaker since Izzy in 2019, go on to beat Sean Strickland in back-to-back fights, submit Israel Adesanya. I saw that. I've also seen Hamza go from supposedly getting a title shot 5 years ago to now finally getting what he deserves. I mean, what he did to Robert Whittaker, no one had ever done, and he did it in just ferocious fashion. So I'm really torn. I'm obviously going to be picking Hamzat in that, but if DDP wins, I'm going to be cheering. So it's going to be one of those things. I'm going to be cheering no matter who wins. But I think Hamzat is just the pick that I have to go with. And for light heavyweight, it gets a bit more complicated. It's a bit more complicated than middleweight. I'll say that in terms of our transition over, because there's just something going on with Alex Pereira that, you know, he just lost to Magomed, and I just don't think anyone wants to see him take on Magomed again. Maybe it's just me. And in my own personal opinion, I would rather see him take on the winner of a supposed title championship matchup between Tom Aspinall and Shogun at heavyweight, and I just think it would work. You know, I know we've had, you know, of course, Alex Pereira had to win a fight at light heavyweight before getting a title shot, but I would just love to throw him in the heavyweight title picture. I really would. It's really weak right now, and I think he could just spice it up. So, in the world where Alex Pereira moves up, Magomed Ankalaev is going to take on Jiří Procházka. But in the world Alex Pereira does not move up and instead fights Magomed Ankalaev, you're going to get the number 2, Jiří Procházka, versus the number 3, Carlos Ubrich. Both of those make sense to me. Now, at number 4, Khalil Rountree Jr., number 5, Jan Blachowicz. I think those two could be intertwined. You know, keep building up Khalil, but Khalil's definitely going to be calling for a title shot, which he shouldn't. And Khalil close will fight up and fight Jiří. But for sake of matchmaking, we'll keep everything in the division. Number 1, Alex Pereira. Champion, Magomed. Number 2, Jiří. Number 3, Ulberg. Number 4, Khalil. Number 5, Jan. That's what we'll do. Jamal Hill at 6. He's going to be welcoming up someone. The number 11th ranked Nazmat Mirzakhanov. The number 8, Dominic Reyes. He's going to be welcoming someone up. You know, that's what I think they're going to do. There's a small chance they have him take on Rakic at 7. And, you know, the winner of that is like, oh, if we finally have a win, because neither of those guys have won in 2 to 3 years. Yeah, Volkan at 9, he's also probably going to be fighting up. He deserves the fight up, but I don't know if he's gonna. I think Volkan might be fighting down. Volkan versus winner of Johnny Walker and Zhang Minghong could be an option. Bogdan Guskov, he'll be fighting Nikita Krylov. I think the winner of that will be fighting up, but light heavyweight has a lot going on, and we just don't really know what's going to happen. It all depends on Alex Poatampera, and depending when he does, you're either going to be getting some big fights or a rerun of fights, and personally, I would like some bigger new fights as opposed to running back, because rematches just kill me. I'm literally so sick of rematches, and this isn't like Alexander Pantoa, Marab, where there's just no one else to fight, so we have to run a rematch. No. This is where we can have new guys, but we just want the world global superstar to get another crack, which I don't think is going to work out. Now, as for our final division, the heavyweight division, what's going on at heavyweight? Well, a lot of good. With a thunderstorm just ended with John Jones, you know, and John Jones has created this thunderstorm since he became champion, even before when Francis Ngannou left the company, for goodness sakes. It's all been tied to John Jones, and he's gone, and the rainbows came out, and that rainbow is Tom Aspinall. You know what Tom Aspinall had to say? I have beaten 5 of the 10 guys in the top 10. I want to beat all 5 and have beaten all top 10 guys in the UFC. That's the champion I want. He wants to be active. He wants to bring back the heavyweight division to its glory, which it has not been in its glory for many a years now. You could say the heavyweight division has not been in its prime since 2018 and 2017. And mind you, they have a decent roster. They really do. Now, heavyweights have gotten more technical, and I will say the top 5, including Tom Aspinall, stand out from the other 35 on the roster by a significant margin. But, you know, it's not impossible to break up. So, Aspinall, who's he going to be defending against first? If it's not Poatampera in a insane super fight, that's the number 1 Ciryl Gane. That's what's going to be going down. And honestly, Aspinall versus Gane makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's beaten number 2, number 3, number 4, you know, number 7. You know, Aspinall has just ran through everyone, and Gane he hasn't faced. And people say Gane can be a good matchup, so let's book it. Pay-per-view later in the year, make it happen. Volkov at 2, interesting. Very interesting. I don't necessarily know what to do with Volkov at 2, but I would say him versus Holton Lemaitre at 5 really appetizes me. That I can get behind. That one I really like. You could have a rematch with him in Curse Blades, but I don't know. Almeida's been calling everyone out. No one will fight Holton Almeida, so I say we give Holton the number 2 guy in the world and let him shine. Sergey Pavlovich at 3. He's taking out Walter Cortez Acosta at 6. Walter Cortez Acosta has just taken the UFC by storm. I'm actually so surprised. He's just been such an absolute stud, but yeah, he's been doing pretty good, and he'll be taking on Sergey Pavlich. What's Curtis Blaydes up to? Well, with the announcement of Marcin Tybura versus Ante Dilija, he gets to take on the winner of that. You're welcome. Moving down to 8, Sergey Spivak. You know, I don't know. I'd say Sergey versus Shamil Gaziev at 11. That's a fight I want to see. I really do. I think that's one you can book. You could even do Sergey versus Ty Tuivasa when Ty inevitably returns a year 7. Oh my gosh, if they fight in 2026, it'd be a 7-year rematch. That'd be insane. But just all depends how active Spivak wants to remain. Derek Lewis at 9, Talshan Chair at 13. If Talshan wins, he's going to be my debut fighter of the year, and he probably will win, which I would just rather him not. I love Derek Lewis, but Talshan Chera is 6'7 with like an 83-inch reach. He is a nightmare for any medium to short heavyweight, period. And then the rest of the ranked heavyweights, I mean, Rizvan Khudiyev did really good against Curtis Blaydes, obviously lost a split decision, so I'd love to see him against Martin Boudet, Mick Parkin, the, you know, guys like that. I even have Rizvan take on Sergey Spivak. That's what I would love to see. And Rizvan Khudiyev kind of strikes as the guy who would take on Sergey Spivak next and lose another split decision. We're like, well, he's good. He just keeps losing. So that's the current state of every division in the UFC. What is the weakest? You know, I don't really like to say the women's just because, you know, you just have 3 dominant women's champions. But honestly, heavyweight is just in its restructuring phase. I think heavyweight's going to be a division that is going to need to be looked at with some tender loving care. Don't be too mean to it. Really don't. Just, you know, leave the heavyweight division be. It'll sort itself out. But we can do have a main event coming up. Derek Lewis, Talshan Tejera. It's going to be your return in 10 days, actually, from when I'm recording this. So we'll wait in the wings. And actually, when you listen to this, our predictions episode will be dropping in the next 2 days. So fun facts with that. But another thing I wanted to do on today's episode was look at our 2025 predictions we made. We made them on December 22nd, I thankfully labeled my notebook and did lose it. Good job on me. But we predicted in all 11 weight classes who would be champion December 31st, who would have the biggest rise, and who would have the biggest fall. And I thankfully labeled where everyone was at currently on my note sheet. I was very good. I was very productive. So we're going to go through all the weight classes again, and I'm going to discuss who, just kind of where I'm at with all my predictions and if it's even possible they can come true. So let's start women's strawweight to men's heavyweight again. Starting with women's strawweight, you know, I said on December 31st, 2025, Zhang Weili would still be your women's strawweight champion. All signs are pointing towards that coming. Very, very true. I mean, I don't think Virna Jandiroba would beat her. And if she does move up to challenge for the flyweight championship, that means she'll be secured as the women's strawweight champion. So I am very happy so far with that prediction. Now, as for who I said would have the biggest rise, I said Jillian Robertson. And before the year began, she was ranked number 12. Currently, she is ranked number 9. So those, you know, there's a trend. And, you know, if she does take on Jessica Andrade, Amanda Lemos, you know, Amanda Ribas moving upwards, this trend can become very, very true. So I am happy so far with that prediction. My biggest fall off, I said Virna Jandiroba because I'm a Virna Jandiroba hater. She was ranked number 3. She's now ranked number 1. So unless, I don't freaking know. We missed on that one, but Zhang Weili is most definitely remaining your women's strawweight champion. Moving on to flyweight, Pantoja was your current champion, is your current champion. I said he would still be your current champion, and all sides are pointing towards him just running through the rest of the division. And who I said would have the biggest rise? None other than Joshua Van. I know ball. You know, I miss on some things, but I know mother trucking ball. And Joshua Van is ranked 15, and now he's ranked number 1. So can I just write that off as being just inherently correct? Amazing. Biggest fall off, I said Amir Albazi. He was ranked number 3, currently number 4. I don't even know who I would say has had a big fall off. Maybe Steve Ersig. I don't know what he was ranked before the year, but yeah, you know, Amir Albazi at 3, currently ranked number 4. We have a lot of the year to, half the year actually, to figure out what's going to happen left, but nailing Joshua Van makes you very happy. Women's flyweight, I actually had Tatiana Suarez written down and live on the podcast. We changed it to Valentina Shevchenko, and thankfully I did, because unless we get some miracle Natalia Silva or Zhang Weili, Valentina is going to remain your champion. And in an insane twist of things, I want you all to know is that Natalia Silva, before the year, was ranked at number 15. Could you believe that? And in a short period of time, she went to now being ranked number one. The Joshua Van treatment. The Joshua Van treatment. I will tell you that. It's awesome. It is absolutely awesome. And man, I've absolutely nailed that prediction right there. I can't remember who she's beaten even. When did she fight at UFC 315? I'm trying to remember. Was that when she fought? All right, so upon further inspection of my notes, she was ranked number 5 and moved up to number 1, and she's next in line for the title shot. So I will say I nailed that prediction. Biggest fall off, I said Rose Namajunas. She was ranked number 6. She's now ranked number 7. I mean, I probably missed on that one, but it's just because Rose isn't that active. She really isn't, but if she does fight downwards more, then yeah, that'll do. Jessica Andrade could be considered having a big fall off. You could even say Karine Silva, but honestly, I don't know. So through those first three weight classes I've talked about, we've nailed the champions, we've nailed our rises, and the fall offs, we'll just have to see. Women's, actually we'll go men's bantamweight next. Men's bantamweight, yes, men's bantamweight. I had Umar winning. You know, this is actually crazy. I had Umar Nurmagomedov winning the bantamweight championship over Merab Dvalishvili, and I firmly believe he was the only one that can beat Merab. And after watching the fight, I've learned it's just not going to happen. So, Umar, we missed on him. Unless he gets a miraculous title shot end of the year, he's not going to become champion. So, missed on that one, but I can live with that. Now, as for Rise, I said Peyton Talbot, and despite having that fallback against Raoni Barcelos, he did manage to bounce back, did manage to get a win, so I'm not going to rule him out. I am absolutely not going to rule him out of still making a run through these last 6 months. For biggest fall-off, I said Marlon Vera. He's ranked 6, currently at 7, and yeah, I do think he will continue to fall off, but as for now, we'll just have to wait and see. Biggest rise, I mean, Amzahabi beat Jose Aldo. You could say that Mauro Bautista is now ranked number 8. I don't know if we've really had a big rise. Gonna be honest, I don't really know if we've had a big rise, had a big fall off. Everyone in the bantamweight division has kind of just remained where they are. If I could say fall off, I might even go Sean O'Malley, oddly. But yeah, so far, bantamweight predictions not as hot as the previous three. Women's bantamweight, I'm pretty confident with. I kid you not, I'm pretty confident with. We nailed Kayla Harrison. Unless Amanda Nunes swoops in out of nowhere, we're going to get bummed there. But Kayla Harrison was ranked number 2. She's your champion. Looking good there. I think Perez was ranked 13th. She's now ranked 7th. She was my prediction for biggest rise. As of right now, looking like she will continue to rise. And she's already jumped into the top 10 after being out of the top 10. I would consider that successful. Hakul Pantin at 1, I said would have the biggest drop-off. She hasn't had any fight news. She's currently ranked number 2. I'm still going to stick with that she falls off and either loses her next bout or retires. So I'm still going to stick strong with that one. Men's featherweight. Now, men's featherweight was interesting. Men's featherweight was interesting because a lot happened that I was unprepared for. First off, Iya Topuria moving up in weight. I was unprepared for that. I was unprepared for Iya Topuria to move up and challenge for double championship status. So I said he would still be your men's champion at featherweight. Now, he never really lost it, but he's also technically not the champion. So we're going to fall into this weird thing with lightweight as well, where the guys didn't lose the belt, but they aren't the champions. So I'll have to see if I consider that true or not for myself. Biggest rise, I said, Gene Silva, and yeah. Yeah, he's ranked number 10 now after being unranked, and he's taking on the number 3 guy coming up. So, yeah, you best betcha that I'm pretty confident that Gene Silva has been a great rise. Biggest fall-off, I said Volk, and little did I know they're giving him a title shot. So, I was doomed from the get-go there, but good for Volk. You missed on that. Gene Silva, though, having a big rise. Love that we predicted that. Lightweight, Islam Makhachev, I said would be champion. How was I supposed to know he was also moving up? I was just not anticipating that to happen so soon. But yes, we are, I guess, missed on that, even though he has never lost the lightweight belt. Gonna have to decide what I do there. Biggest rise, Joel Alvarez. He was actually ranked. What was he ranked here? Number 15. He is no longer ranked, but it's just because he hasn't been able to fight. Him versus Benoit Saint-Denis, he pulled out of that. He just hasn't been able to get an opponent. But if we could get him a Benil Dariush, Motus Gamrot, Amnato Moicano, I feel breaking him in could work. So we're just waiting for this guy to even fight. That's what we're waiting for. Biggest fall-off, I said Michael Chandler. He was ranked 7. He's now ranked 13. I'm pretty confident Michael Chandler has had a massive, massive fall-off. So, yeah, we nailed that one. But, yeah. Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens with Joel Alvarez. Can that boy get a fight? Welterweight division. We said Shavkat Rakhmonov, and I'm just going to be honest. I just think we're doomed because we predicted Shafqat last year, and this dude just cannot get a title shot. He just really can't. Waiting in the wings for him to get it. There is a scenario where maybe September, October, we get Islam, JDM, Islam runs through him. Shafqat wins against Bilal in the meantime. Shafqat, Islam, I don't know, but Shafqat is just inevitable. He will inevitably become champion. We're still waiting on it, but yeah. Looking like that's not true now. Biggest rise, we said Carlos Prates. We did. Still at 13, but the rest of the year still is to come. You know, we've had some big risers. Sean Brady's now 2. Michal Gary, 6. Buckley, 7. Morales, 7. I'd say maybe Michael Morales I would put in that category, but there's still time for Carlos Prates. He goes out, beats Jeff Neal in, when did we say that was, August, then takes on Joaquin Buckley in November, takes a short-nosed fight against, I don't freaking know, Blavovic in December, and yeah, who knows, but I'm not too mad about that one. And Leon Edwards for the biggest fall-off, yeah, he was ranked 1, now he's ranked 4, and I'm very confident that whatever he fights next, he'll also lose, so I'm going to stick to that as a good prediction. Moving up to middleweight, we said that Khamzat would end the year's champion, and if he can beat DDP in a couple months, you betcha, we will have nailed that one. And I do think he'll win, so I'm fairly confident that we nailed that one. Biggest rise, we said Shara Magomedov at 14. How was I supposed to know that him and MVP would be a very dull, non-entertaining fight where he would actually lose? So, Shara, waiting to see what happens with him. He's taking on Marc-Andre Barriot coming up. And there's still potential for him. You can matchmake him with Roman Kapilov, Paul Costa, mix him up with Marvin Vettori. Next thing you know, he's taking on Jared Cannonier. I think Shara Magomedov still has time to switch things around. Biggest fall off, we said Israel Adesanya. He was ranked 2. He's now 4. Kind of like Leon Edwards, he suffered one big loss, and I don't think he's going to be back. But I do still stand by Adesanya. He's had a pretty brutal fall off. Light heavyweight division. Magomed, we said, would be champion. This was before he even fought Oxbury, before it was even announced. And you betcha, he is so ending the year as champion. I think Magomed Ankalaev is so good, and people just don't like him because he's a big Russian dude who knows how to win fights. But yeah, as of right now, we are nailing that prediction. Biggest rise, I said Ivo Aslan. How was I supposed to know Ivo Aslan was not going to have a big rise this year? Oh, man, I was telling him to put the, the devs on the Instagram to put him in EA Sports UFC 5, but Ivo Aslan took a little step back. He'll look to bounce back. Who's actually having a big year? Talk about Zhang Mingyang. Talk about Bogdan Guskov. These are guys on the big rise. You can even say Dominic Reyes. He's now ranked 8. Clear Roundtree Jr. is now ranked 4. Man, sky's the limit for some of these guys, but might have missed on that one. Biggest fall off, I said Jamal Hill. After that Khalil Roundtree Jr. fight, not looking too hot. He was ranked 3 heading into the year. He's now 6. I stand by that one. I do stand by that one. We could have gone Anthony Smith with a little cop out, but yeah, we rode with Jamal Hill, and I think it's so far coming to fruition. And the last division we predicted was heavyweight. Of course, it is the final division. You can predict. We said Tommy Boy would be champion, and Tommy Boy is your champion. I don't think anyone's taking this from Tom. I don't think someone who is in the UFC, in their I don't think there's anyone right now who is actually like the best version of themselves can beat Tom Aspinall. I think Tom Aspinall is in a whole world of his own. I want to see Tom against Francis Ngannou, against John Jones, against Alex Pereira. I want to see DC come back. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is that freaking good. And you best bet he's going to end the year's champion. Halfway through, we've already nailed it. He doesn't even have a fight news. I'm going to be honest, the year is out till September. You know, I'm thinking September 20th you're going to get a fight night. But, yeah, we're going to be waiting to see when we can get Tom Aspinall a title fight. The biggest rise, I said Mick Parkin. Mick was unfortunately humbled by Marcin Tybura. Marcin Tybura out here humbling the likes of Mick Parkin and Hanada Dinas. Good stuff to Marcin Tybura. But, well, of course, Acosta currently is having the biggest rise. And, I mean, I think when year's end comes, we will acknowledge him as having the biggest rise in the division. But good stuff for him so far. Biggest fall-off, I said Curtis Blaydes. And Ruslan Kuniyev would have brought that true, but he hung in there. So Curtis was ranked at 5, now 4. That is not coming true. Who has had the biggest fall-off? You could say Sergey Spivak. He's the name you could throw out. You could say Jarzynka Rozenstruik because he got freaking cut from the company. You could throw that out there, but I don't really know. I don't really know if we've had like an actual heavyweight have a big fall off. But, you know, halfway through the year, those were our predictions. Some can still come true. Some are not good. But overall, we have nailed some of them. I always love looking back and seeing like what I nail, like the Joshua Vans, the Talia Silvas, the Gene Silvas. I love when I nail those predictions. It really brings me joy. And I'll tell you what else brings me joy, and that is predicting things, looking at things. And with the year halfway through, let's do our half of the year rankings for a number of things. And we do this at the end of the year, but I think this is going to be a new staple we do on here where we do it halfway through the year to kind of just see how the year is progressing. So we have multiple categories. We have submission of the year, KO of the year, event of the year, comeback fight of the year, comeback fighter of the year, rookie of the year, fight of the year, female fighter, male fighter. That's 9. Might keep it at 9, might try and bump it to 10, but let's just briefly go through all these, and then I shall send you on your way. So first off, let's do submission of the year. And, you know, there's a couple popular ones that come to mind. You know, Islam just dismantling, and Adam Moicano was one. Sean Brady's submission of Leon Edwards, that was a big one. That one I could really get behind. You know, it's the main event scene where you really think about these types of submissions. But the one for me that is my current submission of the year, and this isn't even like the most creative, this isn't like the best submission, but just for the submission of the year, it's got to be Merab over Sean O'Malley. And I'll tell you why. And it's because Merab does not get finishes. Merab does not finish, guys. Merab has one finish, had one finish in the last 5 years, and it was against Marlon Moraes with just TKO due to exhaustion, okay? But here, rematch against Sugar Sean, shows the improvements, hunts for the neck, lands the guillotine. It's just not a move he does. It would be like, what's a good example? Like, if he like Rose Revlov landed a knockout, it's just not something that's going to happen. And the fact he did it to Sean O'Malley, a global superstar, yeah, that I think has earned me submission of the year. Now, for KO of the year, it changes, man. It changes. I could go through every single fight card and just tell you the trajectory of knockouts of the year. I mean, Roman Kapilov knocking out Chris Curtis, first event of the year. You could even bring up Cesar Almeida over Abdulrazak Al-Hassan, these flatliners. We just watched Gregory Rodriguez knock out Jack Hermanson. How about Nazanin Imavov knocking out Israel Adesanya? Was that not utterly and ridiculously crazy? You could say Mauricio Ruffy's head kick of Bobby Green, or King Green. I think that's a big one. I think the spinning back kick is going to be a lot of people's KO of the year, if I'm being honest. We've had a lot of straight knockouts where people have just been put out cold, which have been utterly fantastic. I know on, was it 314, Reyes over Nikita Krylov, that one was nasty. But the one for me, I just can't get over it, is the most recent knockout. It is Iatopiera over Charles Oliveira. And it's just the fact it's these two big names. It's 2.5 minutes. It's a one punch, he's out cold type of knockout to become a double champion. I mean, yeah, come on. It'd be like when McGregor knocked out Eddie Alvarez, especially Jose Aldo. Like, come on, you gotta give it to him. You gotta give it to him. So, Iatopiera, Merab, I know they're the two big guys, the Georgians, the dominant champs, but, you know, we'll see how the year goes. But right now, when I'm talking about what is the greatest knockout of the year, it's this one. So, that is my knockout of the year. What about event? And honestly, it is, you know, 317 was fantastic. I thought it was great top to bottom. It's easily going to be a pay-per-view. None of the fight nights have really hit this year, if I'm being honest. In fact, the Apex cards might have been a bit better than some of the evented cards we've had. But, you know, Hanadina, Zalman Hines, super entertaining. Jacoby Smith, Terrence McKinnigan finishes. We obviously had a doozy with the woman's fight. Jose Delgado knockout. Greg Rodriguez's knockout. Peyton Talbot, Felipe Lima was entertaining. Moicano and Dariush had its moments. And then Joshua Van and Brandon Ravel might have had fight of the year right now. It is in the running. Pantoa, Kaikara France, entertaining. And Iatopiera, Charles Oliveira was just fantastic. But then my runner-up, which I think is actually going to be in the lead, is going to be UFC 314. And UFC 314 was just amazing. Out of the first 5 prelims, 4 of them were finishes. Chase Hooper, Jim Miller, entertaining. Virna Jandinova, Jan Chonin, the dud of the prelims. Then Danny Gay, Sean Woodson, good comeback by Danny Gay. Then we get to the main card, a Reyes knockout. Gene Silva dismantles Bryce Mitchell. You have Paddy Pimblett, Michael Chandler, and Volkanovski Lopez was one of the most entertaining 5-round fights I've seen in a long time. Like, seriously, when I look through Every other fight night, every other event we've had, I mean, UFC 311 had a fantastic main card, but I gotta go with UFC 314 right now. But UFC 317 is close behind. It's gonna be between those two when I reach it. Now, what about comeback fight of the year? Now, there have been a couple, but there's two that come to mind. And let's talk about a main event. So this is a popular one, Jared Cannonier versus Gregory Rodriguez. And Jared Cannonier lost the first round brutally. He was dropped twice. It was a 10-8. We thought Jared Cannonier was going to get knocked out. It was brutal. He then starts to fight his way back in round two. And Gregory Rodriguez still getting the better of him. You know, Cannonier were like, how is he hanging in there? Round three, turns the tide, lands his own knockdown. Insane. And he's bashing into Gregory Rodriguez. We're not even 30 seconds into round number four. Jared Cannonier has worked his way back. He has done it. He has won the fight with a knockout. Incredible. But seeing what happened in round one, you would never have guessed that he would have won. Now, my other one, very, very underground, if you will, happened at UFC London, might have been. Shauna Bannon, Irish lad. Pooja Tumar, Indian woman. English woman. Irish woman? Is it an Ireland woman? Oh, I don't know how to say it, man. I get a little accent with me. But let me just tell you, Shauna Bannon, I thought was out. I kid you not. So the UFC posted a clip. I might have been driving. I might have been at a party. I might have been out at the bar or something. I was not really paying attention. And I check, and it's her getting knocked out. It's her getting knocked out. You know, she's getting hit with a head kick, punches. The ref goes step in. I put the phone away. You know, and I'm just like, oh, okay. And then, you know, I'm just kind of like, oh, how am I doing on predictions? I'm like, oh, I'm 4-0. Wait, but didn't I predict this wrong? She got an armbar? What? Shauna Bannon was just had her lights out for a second. Pooja Tumar pounded on her, able to work her way back, somehow lock up a submission. You have to find this fight. You have to find this fight. No one's going to have this as their comeback fight of the year, but I'm telling you, it is so good. Shauna Bannon, Pooja Tumar, I still remember it. Isn't that crazy? I still remember this fight. Now, I'm sure there's others out there, but in terms of the main event scene, which is always a great reference, more to think about things, there hasn't really been a comeback of sorts. There really hasn't been anything in that regard. I mean, as I look through every single main event we've had, it's been back and forth. It's been one-sided, but nothing where it's been like a comeback. So, I mean, there's that. I mean, even on UFC 317, we didn't really have any form of comeback. I guess Moicano won round one, so Benil Dariush fought his way back, but nah, I'll be honest. It's going to be that one. Shauna Bannon, Pooja Tumar, but Cannonier Rodriguez, if we do want to go with a big, more known fight. We go with that one. So, who is comeback fighter of the year? And this one's been tough. There really hasn't been anyone. There's a couple names, you know. Benoit Saint-Denis, he has a lot of potential. Obviously, lost to Moicano, lost to Dustin Poirier last year. He has one win so far this year. If he can swing together another one or two more, I would throw him in the picture. You could say Kevin Holland, who went 1-2 in 2024. It was pretty rough, pretty rough. And started out 2025, January, second card of the year, got submitted in round one. But he has since had a fight of the night, had a performance of the night submission, and already has another fight book. So Kevin Holland could be looking at comeback fighter of the year. Another one, Kamaru Usman. Kamaru Usman hadn't fought since 2023. And managed to come back and beat Joaquin Buckley, who was a guy who was just surging, and everyone thought he was up next. He was going to dominate. And, you know, if Usman could get one more fight, I would love to put him there, but he's also in the conversation to regard. And same with Benil Dariush. Benil Dariush had been brutally knocked out twice in 2023, didn't even fight in 2024, comes back, beats Moicano, who was kind of on a tear, you know, if you exclude the Islam Makhachev fight. So it's pretty tricky. It's pretty tricky to say, like, who has been the comeback fighter of the year. I wouldn't even really say we've had an official one. Like, last year was Dominic Reyes. Last year, Dominic Reyes was the guy. But for this year, I just don't really know. I don't even know who could come back and, like, make it so that it's like, oh, like, they had such a down year. You could say Volk. You know, I guess Volk was knocked out last year once. So maybe Volkanovski is your current comeback fighter of the year since he got knocked out by Itabir and now he's the champion. There's your little prediction, but that one we're going to need the next 6 months to transpire to really see. Now, here's my favorite one, Rookie of the Year. And so far, through the first 6 months, there's a couple names. Couple names out there. So Jacoby Smith, 2-0, two finishes, just destroyed Nico Price, biggest favorite in UFC history. Another name, Malcolm Wellmaker. He had the previous record for biggest favorite UFC history. Two fights so far, two nasty knockouts. Great work. Another man, Azamat Vekov. Already has his third fight of the year coming up. 2-0, both knockouts. Amazing. But there's someone else who I'm thinking if they win is going to take the cake, and it's going to be Talashan Teixeira. Because Tailshawn Teixeira debuted in February and is now getting a main event. Tailshawn Teixeira debuted in February and is now getting a main event. It's not often you can see that. So Teixeira has the potential to win Rookie of the Year, but right now, it's one of those three gentlemen I just talked about. And we have six more months to see what can happen. I mean, at this time last year, Carlos Prates was not on my radar for Rookie of the Year, ended the year as Rookie of the Year. So we'll have to see what transpires. We still have a bit more of 2025, but those are my current Rookies of the Year. Tailshawn Teixeira, with a win, will most likely lock it up for the time being. Now, what has been Fight of the Year? So we've had a lot of good fights this year. You know, we've had a lot of good fights. Obviously, Van Rybal is fresh in everyone's mind. Currently, probably the leader for Fight of the Year. It was so fantastic. First fight in UFC history where both guys landed 200 significant strikes each. That's insane. There have been some other good ones, though. Just had Nazim Sadikov versus Nicholas Mota in Azerbaijan. That was wild. I showed it to my parents, and they were like, this is one of the greatest fights I've seen. I'm like, I know. I had no one to watch it with, sadly. That was amazing. Cody Steele versus, oh my gosh, Rong Zhu, UFC 312. The only gem out of UFC 312 was that fight. That fight was insane. If you want to talk about bigger fights, obviously Diego Lopez versus Volkanovski. It's probably been the best title fight that I've seen this year. Yeah, I don't really know. There have been a lot of good ones this year. Bilal Muhammad and JDM, people are going to bring up. I missed that one, unfortunately, but heard from people. It was good. Cannon Rodriguez was a good Apex card, main event, if you will. On UFC 311, Muhammad Umar was a fantastic fight. Jiří Procházka, Jamal Hill was good. But for me, I mean, this is just going off of what I've seen. Nazim Sadikov versus Nicholas Mota is just so freaking good. It's so freaking good. I might have to go with him. But it's tricky. It's going to be one of those things where I determine. But, yeah, don't forget Van Rybal, Rong Zhu versus Cody Steele is another great fight I'd recommend you to watch. But fight of the year, we're going to need to maybe rank this at the end of the year. Female fight of the year. Now, this one's tricky. You know, for fighter of the year, it's pretty simple. Like, if you're a champion and you win two fights, you can be fighter of the year. If you're, you know, it's usually the champions. If you're unranked, you have to win a lot more fights. As for the females, there really hasn't been anyone. Obviously, Zhang Weili and Valentina have won, but that's about it. Other than that, no real women have gone out and really made a statement this year. So for right now, it's Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison coming to the UFC, third UFC fight, gets a title shot, submits Juliana Pena. Yeah. Did what she had to do. And honestly, when I look at Amanda Nunes versus Julia Pena, Julia Pena took her all five rounds. Kayla Harrison only needed less than two rounds. So Kayla Harrison right now, Women's Fighter of the Year. And what happens if she loses to Amanda Nunes? I mean, I still think she would be your Female Fighter of the Year. But Zhang Weili, Valentina Shevchenko, if we do inevitably get that fight, the winner of that will be your Female Fighter of the Year. I'll tell you that right now. But as for now, it's Kayla Harrison, and there really isn't anything else to go off of, despite the fact she just has came in and won the championship. Now, for the Male Fighter of the Year, a bit more tricky. I'll say people are going to throw out Ilia Topuria just because of him becoming double champ. I love that. You can also say the same thing for Islam Makhachev. Now, this is just going to depend if Islam wins and then if he has a pure defense again. But those two are definitely going to be for Male Fighter of the Year. Here's a name you don't know. Melquizel Costa. He's already 3-0 this year through 6 months. Looking to get some more fights. Not even ranked at featherweight. He has potential. Joshua Van. He's already fought three times this year. He's now the number one ranked guy. Yeah. Yeah, Joshua Van has been him so far this year. You can even say Dominic Reyes has potential to be Fighter of the Year. You really do. You know, with the knockout of Nikita, he's now looking upwards into the top seven. Lots going on there. Check down my Elena. If he beats Islam Makhachev, he's probably taking the cake for Fight of the Year. You have DDP if he beats Hamza. You have so many guys, but for right now, it's Merab Dvevashvili. It's got to be. He's had an excellent fight with Umar Nurmagomedov, like I said, in the running for Fight of the Year, and he dismantled Sean O'Malley and submitted him. So Merab taking the cake, and I mean, I could even see a world where Merab Dvevashvili wins Fighter of the Year, Fight of the Year, main event's the event of the year as the submission of the year. Who knows? Maybe he goes out and KOs Corey Sandhagen in a comeback fight. He gets a comeback of the year and knockout of the year. But Merab right now is my Male Fighter of the Year. He's had two title defenses through 6 months. You know who else has done that? Literally no one. Literally no one. And we don't actually have another champion defending this year who is going to have the potential to do that. That's currently booked. So, Mahram Dushali, my current fighter of the year. But yes, those are my halfway through the year awards. That's what we're going to be doing so far. But yeah, still have a lot to see. What transpires July, rounding out really good. We go into Nashville. We go to, St. Louis. We go to Louisiana, New Orleans, and then we end in Abu Dhabi. And honestly, these three cards build on each other. Nashville, nowhere near as good as 318. 318, nowhere near as good as Abu Dhabi. Kid you out, Abu Dhabi is a pay-per-view level card. We talked about it last episode. It is pay-per-view level. We're getting into August. We have to get through a couple Apex cards, and then we get to UFC 319 in Chicago, Illinois, which is going to be potentially event of the year. So, if you haven't got your UFC rundown yet, you need to go listen to another episode of the Surprise Jam Podcast. But as for today, that's all we got. Wrapping up episode 203 just like that. I hope everyone had a fantastic 4th of July weekend. I'm excited. I'm about to leave to go to Milwaukee, go to a music festival. So hopefully it's fun. If I die, well, this isn't a time to upload a 3 July. I actually never see the day of light of this. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But ladies and gentlemen, I will wrap it up with that. You guys, go out there. Have a great time, and I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.